Suit me. You just say when. Huh? What do you say? I will share a little cartoon with you I saw in a magazine several years ago. I still think it's one of the funniest things I ever saw. It showed an old drunk laying down in the gutter, and there were three Salvation Army people strategically placed around him. One with an accordion, and I think one had a horn or something, and the guy looks up with eyes about half shut and half open and a halfway grin, and he says, "Play Melancholy Baby." And I... Am I okay now? Okay. Well, this is great. Everything seems to work out in one way or another around AA. That gave me a chance to get a little bit unnervous. I always get a little nervous when I get up before one of these things, and it doesn't really matter whether there are two people out there or 200. There's still a little part of me that thinks that somebody out there is going to throw a rock or a tomato. And once I realize it really isn't so, I'm all right. I guess that's one of the things that made me comfortable when I drank. That was one of the discomforts that temporarily went away. My name is Carl Hest. I'm an alcoholic and a drug addict. Hi. And one day a little piece of grace came floating down and touched me, and I didn't want to drink anymore. AA kept me afloat long enough to where I wanted to get sober. Can I stand back a little bit now? Okay. I'm about to break my back. Yeah, I'm willing to go to any lengths, I really am. That's fine. I've always been willing to go to any lengths. When I drank, I went to any lengths. And let me say, while I think about it, my alcoholism is the hardest work I ever did. A lot of people talk about 9-to-5 jobs and a 4-day work week. There ain't no such thing like that with alcoholism. It was, by all odds, the hardest thing I ever did, and it kind of, one time it'll irritate me, and the next time it amuses me when I hear people talk about alcoholics being lazy and shiftless. It just really isn't so. Because you just, you know, there's just no way. I drank all the time, day and night, weekends, holidays, all the time. A lot of times at our group we talk about the dangers of holidays. Well, December the 23rd was just as big an event to me as December the 25th. And March the 9th was just as meaningful as Easter, and I just stayed drunk all the time, and I was just that kind of an alcoholic. You know, I saw something today that I've tried to share this same feeling a lot of times, and what this thing said was that this thing of alcoholism and addiction to other chemicals is just sort of a single line that just sort of goes from one to the other. Now, if you want to really insult a thoroughbred alcoholic, just suggest to him that he could get hooked on pills. But As a matter of fact, people do it all the time. They come in AA and they get sober, and somewhere along the line they get nervous or go through the change or do something. And they go to somebody, some well-meaning, ignorant physician, there's a double thing there. There's the ignorance on the part of a lot of doctors, and there's the dishonesty on the part of the alcoholic who's never admitted to his doctor that he is an alcoholic and has an addictive personality. And the next thing you know, we got somebody in the hospital loaded up on pills, or the pills teased him to death, and he went back to drinking. And I have known a lot of drug addicts who finally got the door shut. They couldn't get any more narcotics, and finally somebody shut this door and that door, and finally they got down to where there was not much left other than booze, and they became real first-rate alcoholics. The thing of it is that there's no accident that happened. The thing was there all the time. And I found out the hard way that if you want to stay sober, it sure does help to quit drinking and taking pills. I've got an old boy I've been working at and working with, and over around Tuskegee. Now, that boy drives about 60 miles every Tuesday night to come to Tuskegee to meet. Well, he hadn't had a drink since about July, but he's got to have those meal times. And he tells me that if he doesn't take them, he's nervous. But I watched him trying to drink a cup of coffee the other day, and honestly, I never shook that bad when I was drinking. And what he doesn't realize is that he's gotten to a point with this stuff to where they're causing him really more irritability than his nerves could ever do. And instead of seeing the need to quit them, he sees the need to take more of them, which is going to cause more irritability and more pills. And I don't know. I'm sure one day the truth will hit him. I just hate it has to happen that way. Well, my name is Carl, and I'm grateful to be here tonight. I owe a lot of people my life. One way I could put it, I suppose, is I got to AA before I was ready to get serious about getting sober. But I don't think I would have survived if AA hadn't come along. They kept me buoyed up, and I survived long enough till I reached a point one wonderful day when I really wanted to be sober more than anything else. I'd have never lived if it hadn't been for AA. I know that. When AA came to me, I was out of everything, and I don't really believe I even wanted to live. I was talking to a lady earlier today from Louisville, and we were talking about that, and she said I kind of looked that way, like I sort of really had nothing to live for. So I'm doubly thankful to AA that they kept me buoyed up and loved me and put up with me in spite of my wanting to live the best of two worlds. Until I got serious about wanting to get sober. I grew up in Montgomery, and I was pretty much of a loner from an early age, and I pretty well stayed that way until I began to get around AA. I had one characteristic that I think is probably common in all of us, and that is I didn't like me. I didn't like myself. I was aware of that from an early age. I was ashamed of myself. I was ashamed of my family. I didn't know why I felt that way, but I did. And I remember growing up, I used to spend a lot of time wishing that I felt differently. And I can guarantee you, the first time I ever had a couple of drinks, I went for it, hook, line, and sinker. I made a decision the first time I ever drank that this was for me. In fact, I got a little mad that I hadn't found it sooner. And so I really was waiting for it all the time. I finished school there in Montgomery, and I spent a year fooling around in college. I didn't really do anything. I had always wanted to study medicine, but my family didn't have any money, and I didn't know how I would do it. So for the lack of something better to do, one day I just went down and joined the Army. I was real impulsive. That sort of thing was just everyday stuff for me. So I went in the Army and went overseas, and they had a war going. And that helped me for a while. I wasn't bored. I had grown up. I know growing up, I used to be so mindful of being bored to death all the time. Well, looking back now and knowing myself a little better, no wonder I was bored. All I had was me. And who wouldn't be bored? I know my old sponsor told me one time that he just wouldn't let me be alone. And he told me one day, he said, "You may be the best company in the world for somebody else, but you ain't worth a damn for yourself." And I think that's true. But anyway, I had a blackout overseas. In fact, I had a blackout in a foreign country. I didn't know anybody in the whole country. And somehow I got back on the right airplane going back to where I came. And I, you know, it's a funny thing. I remember thinking about it at the time. I was on a plane going back to Korea. And all of a sudden, I realized I had some time I couldn't account for. And immediately, I said, well, doesn't everybody do this? This wartime, I'm a nervous racehorse type. Doesn't everybody do this? Well, I found out later, no, everybody didn't do that. But I just rationalized it off, even at that early time. And anyway, I came on back to this country and wound up with a GI Bill, and I began to see my way clear to go to school, and I enrolled at Auburn University. And a funny thing, I didn't drink at all while I was at Auburn. I was too busy going year-round, taking maximum overloads, making good grades, hoping to get in medical school. I worked hard. My pre-alcoholism was really going full blast. The main reason that I was working to make good grades was not to get in medical school. It was because I needed that kind of a feeling. My pure ego thing. And, you know, the thing about being egotistical is you can get a lot of work done. I made probably the best grades that have been made in the School of Pharmacy over there. Well, at that time, it was the best grades that had ever been made. And I used to tell myself, now, if I could just do certain things, you ever do this, if I could just work and do this and arrive at this, then I'd be happy. I used to plan all these happiness trips. And, you know, I'd get to my destination and it wouldn't be worth a darn. And really, it represented more failure because I had just known that was going to be it and it wasn't. And it looked like I would set my goals higher and higher and up to a point I could reach them. And it was just more emptiness, more frustration, more self-dislike, I suppose. Anyway, I finished Auburn and I was accepted in medical school. And I got to Birmingham and found out that medical students are bad to drink on weekends. It's kind of a way of life up there on weekend. Everybody just kind of gets dog drunk. I guess they're still doing it. But anyway, I started trying to drink, and I don't know how you were, but I had a little trouble getting to be an alcoholic. I had to work at it. I used to vomit all the time, and I was real sincere, though. I was kind of like Charlie Brown in the paper. Charlie Brown said he can't understand why he never wins a ball game. We're so sincere. And I was kind of that way. I couldn't keep a drink down, but boy, I really kept trying. And finally, I kept them down. Now, normal people wouldn't do things like that. I've got friends that I call normal drinkers, and I just know they wouldn't go to all that trouble to drink. I can't believe they would. I can't believe anybody would except somebody with my makeup or something like mine. So I started keeping the drinks down. I started passing out. I drank extremely fast. It looked like when I had that first little glow from a drink, all of a sudden I just couldn't get it in fast enough. I'd get a little bit of a high, and I'd want it higher and higher and higher. And I passed out a lot, and I was a lot of trouble to a lot of people. They had to drag me home, and I was noisy, and I call it tin horn drinking. That's the way mine was. A lot of throwing up, a lot of passing out, a lot of noise. I loved what alcohol did to my head. And the thing it did was this. Now, all these years that I grew up, I kind of felt like I was a spectator. It looked to me like life was going on, and I was just kind of standing over to the side watching it. When I took a couple of drinks, I felt plugged in. And I didn't want to sit over in the corner and meditate and daydream when I started feeling good after a few drinks. I wanted to get in there and mingle with the world. I wanted to talk to people. I wanted to be with people. I wanted to do those things that I never had felt comfortable doing sober. But I couldn't do it very well because the booze made me a total disaster from the neck down. I couldn't walk good. I couldn't talk good. And I just had a real time learning how to drink. But I kept on with it. About the second year I was up there, I ran into the pills. And I made a wonderful discovery. I learned that if I took a certain number of pills, and that did me a world of good. So I started doing just that in the daytime. And at night, I would take them and drink a little with it. It was not common knowledge back then that you shouldn't mix liquor and pills. I don't think it would have made a bit of difference. I think I'd have gone on and done it anyway, even if they'd had signs all over the place saying, don't dare mix them. I've got a patient now, and he just tickled me no end. He's an alcoholic, and somebody got two or three friends that keep prescribing Librium and stuff like that for him. And he always looks at me real serious and says, oh, well, I never drink when I'm taking these. And I said, well, John, what's the difference? You know, you're just chewing up your liquor when you take those things. And, oh, no, you don't understand. I said, yeah, John, I understand. But anyway, I found out I could navigate better with these pills. I could still get the same good feeling, the euphoria in the head, and navigate better. I could talk better. I could walk better. I could dance. I could do a lot of things. I'm sure I never did any of these things as well as I thought I did. I think we drunks are all alike. We always think we function a lot better than we really do. And we also think nobody knows, and everybody does. I was the last one to learn about my drinking problem. Everybody else in town already knew about it. And that's just part of the disease, I suppose. Anyway, somehow I graduated from medical school. And I went on into an internship. And let me say, it's difficult to be an alcoholic on an intern salary. It's really hard. We didn't make much money, and I drank at every opportunity, and it was hard. I used to play a lot of records at night. I'd get out classical music and turn that stereo about 3 decibels above the threshold of pain, and and my wife, it, bless her heart, is the one that hadn't just driven her stone nuts. 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, I'd be in there experiencing these wonderful sounds and living back in the 18th century with all these geniuses. I went out to see a fellow the other day, and the first thing he showed me was his stereo set going full blast. I thought, my God, he was about half stoned, and I know how that music made him feel. Oh, man, I came home and told you about it. And it's funny how if you keep in touch with your experiencing, you know, you remember a lot of these things, and it's the only way I've been able to find some funny things in my alcoholism, because so little of mine was funny. Now, a lot of people, they seemed like some of their experiences were a little funnier than mine, and that's great. Mine were not very funny. Mine had an awful lot of sadness, heartache, isolation, tearing up a bunch of people's personalities and souls, and it just wasn't much funny about it. But I keep trying to find something funny because I think it's good medicine. Anyway, I got through my internship, and I decided at that time that my main problem was that I had had too much supervision, that what I needed to do was get out, go to a small community and be my own boss, and do the thing that I love best. So I went to a small town, I did the thing I love best, I drank and took pills all the time. And I even practiced a little medicine, not much. I thought it was really a paradise. I, at that time, had not really hurt myself too bad. But about 15 months after that, I had developed hepatitis. I couldn't keep a drink down or anything else. I had run out of injectable drugs, and that's what's known as being uptight. I thought about it. I had been drunk for 5 years, and all of a sudden I got no way to get anything in, and I thought I was going to die. I really did. I went down to about 130 pounds, and I just thought I was going to die. And anyway, some friends of mine got me up to Lexington. My reaction to that was that it was a quick solution to a bad situation. I stayed there 5 months. I went through the worst withdrawal I ever had because I was coming off liquor, I was coming off barbiturates, I was coming off hard narcotics, and I don't know what else. But it was painful, extremely painful. And the worst part of it was not the first few days. The worst part of it was I went about 58 nights. It sounds like a lie, but it isn't. I went about 58 nights without being able to sleep, except the last 4 or 5 nights of that time, I would doze for about 30 minutes just before dawn. I thought I was going to die. I didn't think anybody could do that. I thought it would kill you. And I talk to people every day who get real uptight about being unable to sleep and being nervous. I think those are the two things that worry a person most when they first start getting sober. Doc, I'm nervous and I can't sleep. What do I do? Well, just be nervous and don't sleep. But I'm proud to tell you that I can tell them with some authenticity that insomnia absolutely will not kill you. Seriously though, I had begun to get kind of squirrely-headed. I wasn't used to being awake 23 and a half hours out of 24. And it's tiring, and it just takes a lot out of you. But anyway, you would think, now I went through all this pain, all this misery, and you would think that might help a person see that they just might have a problem. I stayed there 3 more months, people telling me when to eat, when to get up, when to go to bed, what to do in the way of work, which for me was humiliating as it could be, because I was a smart, intelligent physician, and you just don't talk to smart, intelligent physicians that way. As Dr. John puts it, though, in their eyes, I was number 66127, and that was it. But you would think that a fellow that had any kind of honest dealings with himself would get the notion that maybe he had a little problem. When the day I walked out of there, I remember exactly what I told myself. I thought about all these bad things and all, and I remember I said to myself, From now on, I must be more careful. That was a sum total of my evaluation of that 5 months. But isn't that exactly what the big book tells us? I figured that somehow, someday, I'd go back and I'd be able to drink normally and take pills, and it would work out, and the ceiling wouldn't fall, and my wife wouldn't get mad, and the dog wouldn't tuck his tail and go behind the sofa, and the patients would come back, and the neighbors wouldn't give me one of those little funny looks, and all this stuff. I just knew that somehow, this next time, I would do it right, and I guess we'll all live happily ever after. That's really what it is. It's a fairy tale. And the big book says the great obsession of every abnormal drinker is that somehow, someday, he's going to drink normally again. And I know I must have gone through that 100 or 1,000 times. Boy, I caught hell this time, but next time, it's right around that corner. I know I'm going to find it next time. I'm going to drink right, and my wife will love me, and everybody, and I'll get my job back, and I'll drink, and it'll be fun, and no more hangovers, and no more jails, and no more hospitals, and oh man, we're just going to do it right. And it never happened to me. If I have a message tonight, that's it. I never found that corner around which was two drinks, then no more. I'm just as glad that it worked out that way. I wouldn't trade anything in God's world for what I've found in AA since I decided I wanted to be sober. I wouldn't trade it for anything. I can cut a lot of this drunk log short by just telling you that I continued to get worse and worse and worse. I got into what I call the red light district of alcoholism, where the lights really start flashing. I started getting into the hospitals a lot. I started getting in jails because the drunker I was, the more I loved to get in an automobile and drive. And they don't like that. And they'll put you in jail for it. I got my license taken away. I'd go in hospitals and I'd run out of sleeping pills and I'd go into convulsions and DTs. And one time the psychiatrist told my wife, said, well, he's not going to live. A couple of days later he said, well, looks like he's going to live, but he'd surely be a vegetable. And then we'll just have to send him to Bryce for the rest of his life. And a couple more days he said, I'm going to ask him a couple of questions and if he answers them intelligently, I guess we can assume he's all right, and I guess I must have passed the test. All I know is the next day after I sort of came to myself, I was playing bridge with the nurses, and I think they were convinced by the end of the day that my problem was my wife. Now, I don't know. Sometimes I think people just want to believe that. I have talked with a lot of people about their neighbors, and they kind of got the notion that this poor wife is really to blame more than anybody's giving her credit for. And I don't know why it's that way. I really don't. But I have had that implied to me quite a bit. Well, that suited me fine. I knew my wife was my problem because she gave me hell all the time, and it got to where when I would hide liquor and pills, she'd find them. She got real good at finding them, and that was bad. And I went on back, and it was just more of the same. Back, I went to the state mental hospital and stayed a month, and that didn't do any good. The reason it didn't do any good was because I still wasn't looking for any help. At that time, my wife and I had separated, and somehow she let me come and stay with her for 3 or 4 months, about 3 months, when I got out of the insane asylum, which I guess she felt sort of like she should have after all she committed me. And But anyway, bless her heart, she agreed to let me come. That was the dumbest thing she ever did. But I stayed in Birmingham for 3 months. She had found a little job that paid her next to nothing, but somehow she was paying for some of the stuff that I had really messed up. I had just bought a new car and had gone out and totaled it all over the highway, and she was trying to pay this thing back a little few dollars a month. And little dumb, silly things like that, like trying to be responsible for both of us. And she was doing all kind of stupid things like that. Anyway, those were about three of the worst months I ever had. I had no money. The only money I had was what I was able to steal out of her purse. The great physician had come a long way. And I'd go down and I found myself. I used to wonder why I drank that way, and I didn't know, but, you know, it was sort of gay and cavalier. That way all of humanity got a chance to touch me. And yeah, it just, I tell you, there's just no limit to what a drunk will do to build his ego up. But anyway, I remember one day I needed a drink bad. I mean real bad. And if you're an alcoholic, you know what I mean when I say I need to drink real bad. And I remember I saw a little hole in the wall blood bank down there, and I went in and I gave them a pint of blood. And I think they gave me about $4.50 for it. And I just about begged on my knees for them to give me more. I knew I couldn't buy much whiskey with $4. And, you know, it had gotten to that, and I think about that day a lot. Not a lot, I take that back. I don't think about it a lot, but I think about it often enough. When I get a little bit prissy, it does me good to think back about that. It reminds me, you know, just go on, quit working these 12 steps, quit praying, quit going to meetings. Look for that little drink around the corner, and it wouldn't take too much to get back down to the blood bank. I believe that. I have no doubts in my mind now. Anyway, I came on back to Macon County, and it just kept getting worse and worse. I had no more practice left. And finally, some people thought I ought to try Lexington again, and this time I had some pressure from the state medical examiners. So I went back. And I think at this time I was perfectly sure in my own mind that I was going to die drunk. One night I was sitting in a chair in this den watching a television set that wasn't on. I did that a lot. I really did. I would just sort of stare into the blankness of it, and I don't know, I didn't find it too bad. But one night, I think I came to grips with the idea that I just wasn't going to ever get any better, and I think I believed it that night. And I never had been able to get serious about suicide, so it occurred to me that the only thing left was for me to just drink as hard as I could and as fast as I could, and maybe I'd get lucky and it wouldn't last too long. So that was the sort of behavior that was going on with me when I went back to Lexington. Some way or another, after I got up there, I guess maybe a little spark of life or something grabbed a hold of me. And the reason I know it did is because I got to the point where I was scared about leaving. And the day I left, I haven't had many days that I was as afraid as I was the day I left, because I knew what was going to happen. It was just like going to a firing squad. I knew just exactly what was going to happen when I walked out the gate. I didn't want it to happen, but I didn't know any way to keep it from happening. I wound up drunk that day in a bar in downtown Lexington, and I got on back to the county, and through a series of events, I wound up in the padded cell there. We had a brand new jail in Macon County at that time. Brand new jail, a brand new padded cell. very best of material, the best quality. And when I came to, that's where I was. Now, let me tell you how sick I was in those days. I had gotten to the point about padded cells where they were no threat to me. I felt kind of comfortable in them. I felt secure. I felt protected in padded cells. Now, that, I would suggest to you, is sick. I just think that that's not normal behavior. But I really did. I looked around. I thought, yeah, nice padded cell. And I hope you don't think I'm trying to put you on. I really felt that way. The longer I live and look back, the more I realize how sick I was. I was just a totally sick person. I had lost what little I'd accumulated in the way of material things. I had nothing. My wife and I were separated. I didn't even have a place to stay. I was under protective custody. I couldn't even get arrested like most folks. I was under protective custody like a kid that gets lost from his mother at the carnival. I couldn't help but wonder, though, where would I go? What would I do when I left there? I had no money, nowhere to go, nobody to search out. My friends by then had just kind of thrown their hands up in the air and backed off. I had about 22 cents. I was still wearing winter clothes, and it was late May, and it was the only clothes I had. Sometimes I hear people say, well, I can't go to the meeting tonight. I haven't got anything good enough to wear. Well, I went all one summer in winter clothes. You can do it if you have to. I did a lot of things and still do that I didn't much want to. I don't do near as many things nowadays that I don't want to, though. But anyway, through a series of events, I wound up over in Louisville, Georgia. And people tell me that at that time I was... I wasn't much to look at. I can believe that. I was just kind of walking around in a fog of some sort. Now, physically, I was in the best condition I'd ever been in, I guess, because I'd gotten on one of these exercise kicks at Lexington. But mentally and spiritually, I was absolutely at rock bottom. Or at least I thought I was. Anyway, I stayed over around Louisville for 2 months, went to AA night and day, and one thing I remember right off the bat, I felt like I was in the right place. I think it was the first time in my life I had ever been anywhere where I felt like I was in the right place. When I was a kid, I used to, whatever situation I was in, it felt like being in the ladies' restroom. Just completely out of place. And anyway, I thought, well, now this AA is a great thing. I just know they can help me get my wife back and get me some money and get me back in practice. Well, I found out AA wasn't particularly in the marriage counseling business, and it wasn't in the money lending business. But finally, after a couple of months, I came back to Tuskegee and started trying to put some kind of a life back together. I remember I went to see a banker friend of mine, and I needed a little bit of money, and $300 is what it was, and at that time that sounded like more than all the money in the world. And I'd already decided he wasn't going to lend it to me. You know how we go ahead and plan the results of everything beforehand so we won't ever be disappointed. We all like a little certainty in our lives. But we drunks haven't got any monopoly on that. My wife makes a career out of that, and my mother-in-law. and everybody else I know does it. But, you know, it's nice to be able to look around and understand people a little bit and to be able to laugh with them and at them and just accept them and love them the way they are. This program has done me a world of good. But anyway, I I spent a good bit of time around AA trying to live the best of both worlds. I love the program. I love the meeting, the people. But the idea of no more drinking at all, I could not imagine. I simply could not imagine. Which is no great surprise. The big book says right in the introduction there, the little doctor's opinion that an alcoholic cannot imagine life without drinking. He thinks his life is the only normal one. That was me. I couldn't imagine it. It's just like I look at smoking now. I've been thinking about quitting smoking. I'm wanting to want to quit. But I'm scared to quit. I'm afraid it'll hurt. I'm afraid it'll make me nervous. And I don't like to hurt and be nervous. But anyway, I went from a constant, every day, every night drinker to what I call an AA periodic. I would stay dry a while, and then I would drink a while. And I'd stay dry a while, and I'd drink a while. And all this time, nobody ever said, "Why don't you quit coming to AA? You're an offense to the whole group," or anything like that. And I thank God that they thought enough of me and had enough concern for me that they put up with me. Now, I don't mean I went in and raised sand at the meeting or anything like that. I didn't. The only mistake that I know I never made in AA, I never quit going to the meetings. I would go dry, a little bit drunk, pretty drunk. You can't do that forever, though. Sooner or later, you're going to either sober up or you're going to quit going, I think. Anyway, I got to a point there where I went 9 whole months dry. Still not working any steps. Thought I had taken the first one. Found out later I hadn't. And all of a sudden, I'm going to a lot of meetings. I'm running my mouth a lot about AA, but not really putting it into my life. The day came when I said, "Well, hell, drinking's better than this." So I went back, and my last drunk lasted 2 years. It's a funny thing. I did very little drinking. I took a great number of pills during that time. My drinking was kind of social drinking that went on while I was loaded up on pills. I don't mean that I'm a social drinker, but I found if I was loaded enough on pills, I could sip drinks. You can only get so bombed. And that's the only way I was ever able to do it. But anyway, I worked every day. I think I missed one day of work in those 2 years. I made more money those 2 years than I ever made before or since. And I began to accumulate things. Right toward the end of it, I got to thinking about this story of King Midas, about how everything he touched turned to gold, and the more gold he had, the more miserable he got. And that was the way it was with me. I began to try to get free of these pills and the drinking and all, and I simply could not do it. I finally went in the hospital after 2 years. And I made one real smart decision. I decided I had spent 2 years trying to take care of it on my own, and it hadn't worked, and maybe it was time I listened to somebody else. So I went in there, and I stayed 21 days in this hospital. And like most people, I worried like the devil about what all I had to do at home. I needed to get out and go take care of this and take care of that. But I stayed. And when I left, I don't really believe that I had still come to grips with the first step. It was a little after that, I went to the hospital one day, and when I started to leave the hospital to come home, I had every idea of going home and taking a couple of drinks. I got up to this caution light where you have to stop for a minute. And all of a sudden I said, do you really want to get back into that? Now, I hadn't had anything to drink or any pills at all for about, maybe 2 weeks. And somewhere inside of me, something said, no, I don't. And I really meant it. I didn't want to get back into it. So I went home, and I never took that drink. And a short time after that, I was driving along uptown in Tuskegee, and I had an experience like I never had before. I have to call it a spiritual experience because that's what it was. I'll try to tell you how it was, although I won't be able to. It seemed to me, and it was of all the times, it was high noon, traffic all over the place, horns honking, cars everywhere, and I'm by myself in the car. And it seemed to me like all of a sudden there was a tremendous force, a tremendous strength in that car with me, and it seemed as though my head just kind of opened up. And some things became very clear to me for the first time. The first thing was that I didn't ever have to take another drink if I didn't want to. If I was willing to live by spiritual principles day by day, that I didn't have to drink anymore if I didn't want to. And I got to thinking about it, and I realized that I didn't really want to drink anyway, because for me to drink meant isolation, heartache, suffering, all that stuff. The thing I liked about AA, the fellowship and all that, that seemed a lot more attractive. And also, I think I realized that day that there was no way in hell I'd ever drink right. And I guess maybe I took the first three steps that day in that car. But there was such an assurance that went along with this idea that I didn't have to drink anymore if I didn't want to, if I was willing to live this program one day at a time. And I believed it then, I believe it tonight, and I don't think anything one day at a time is going to shake my doubt in that. Funny thing, 4 or 5 months after that, I was up the lake. We went up there for a week's vacation, had absolutely no responsibilities beyond surviving. Just don't fall in the lake and drown. That was all I had to do. And was looking forward to a whole week of fun and not doing anything. And I walked in this cabin, and so all of a sudden, just out of a clear, I had the worst craving for a drink. I've never had one any worse. Even when I was sick and needed a drink, I've never had a craving any worse. And it scared me. I couldn't imagine why, because by then I really wanted to be sober. I had been sober just long enough to where I liked the way it felt, and I liked the little pride that it gave me, and from knowing where I had been and who I'd been with and that kind of thing. And I walked into a little bathroom in there, and I remember looking out the window, and there was a little boat going by on the lake and a couple of skiers behind it, and I caught myself saying, God, I sure need some help. And I don't know how long it was. In a few minutes, that craving went away. I learned two things that day. I learned that you can want to be sober and still get a craving. And I learned what it says and how it works right in the end when it says that God could and would if he was sober. Now, the way I do my little AA thing is I go to about 4 meetings a week because I like to go to AA. It's a funny thing. When I used to try to get sober by brute force, I worked at it. It wore me out. I used to go to meetings because I thought if I didn't, I'd get drunk and that kind of thing. The thing that impresses me in the last couple of years is that it's, you know, I just look forward to going to AA. I go because it's fun. I go because I got people there that love me, people I love. I love a lot of people in this room, and I'm going to love a lot more before I leave here. You see, when I came to AA, I don't think I knew anything about loving anybody. But I had it demonstrated to me over and over. And I think maybe I learned how from people in AA. I read the big book a lot. I don't know how many times I've read it. Every time I read it, they've added something to it. I read the literature. I keep abreast of what's going on in the alcoholism field. But let me say this, for gosh sakes. I know I have learned a lot about alcoholism, but I sure don't let it mess up what I know about keeping me sober. It's real easy to get hung up on this thing about alcoholism and forget all you know about sobriety. I used to sit up and drink scotch and water and read the Quarterly Journal of Alcohol Studies from Rutgers University, and I thought, boy, they're really getting it now. They're coming close. I found, I guess, the most important thing that people in AA showed me was they showed me the way to find God. It looked like I was having a terrible time finding God, and I guess one day he decided he just had to show himself to me. I have come to the point, one day I got thinking about it, and I thought, you know, I had started reading the Bible again and all that, and I thought, now, if God could take the craving for drink away from me, he could do anything. And I believe that. And I thought, if my minister and the Bible and all that says that he sent a son to the world that saved me, why shouldn't I believe it? So, with that in mind, I just bought the whole package. And just on a real simple way like that, if he could get me sober, he could do anything he wanted to. And I was kind of like Father Fowle used to say about the guy that finally, he couldn't make up his mind whether he believed in God or not, and finally called Father Fowle one morning. He said, you know, I finally did it. He said, I decided I'd rather die believing there is a God and we'll get there and find out there's not than to not believe in God and get there and find out that there is. And, but I don't do as much praying and meditating as I hope I'll be doing tomorrow and the next day. It helps me, though. And the one thing that helps me a lot is trying to carry this message. I'm real lucky. I'm in a position to where I see a lot of alcoholics. I treat a lot of alcoholics in the hospital. I say treat them, I dry them out. And I bootleg as much AA into them as I can. And if I see that that's not going to work, I predict their future for them. So, and, well, anyway, it gives you something to do. And, but it helps me a lot. I tell you, that it just has to do something to you when you're standing up, sewing up somebody's head and these fumes coming up right in your face from a little bit too much booze. And, of course, I can't identify with a guy like that. Not really. But if I think about it, I can say to myself, that could be me. That could be me. I've been on one of those tables. I've had stitches. But I am so grateful to AA. I don't ever know really how to end a talk. I used to wonder why in the world it took me so long to get sober. I look around now and I wonder, you know, I see how sick I was, and I think I was. And I wonder now, how did I get here so soon? I had my last drink on January the 17th, 1972, and I have had no mood-changing drugs of any kind since that time. No alcohol, no nothing, no Nitol. no nothing. I saw a sign, and I'm going to shut up after I say this. I saw a sign in Panama City one time that describes my AA experience to a T. You know, there's a time in our life where one day we're drunk and the next day we're sober, or we're beginning to get sober. And this sign says, no amount of careful planning will ever replace dumb luck. And what that means to me is I used to plan when I was going to get sober. I used to try to schedule it. I'd say, well, I better not do it this week. I got two or three meetings and I don't need to be nervous. Well, and I'd look in February and March and I'd say, well, the first week in June looks pretty good. I bet I had 100 times that I said, well, I'm going to quit today. That means tomorrow will be my AA birthday, whatever the day it was. It never worked. The last drink that I took wasn't supposed to be my last drink. I didn't intend it to be my last drink. But as it turned out, by the grace of God and all of you, it has been my last drink. And I don't want any more. The point is that I didn't even plan it. It just happened. That's the way I look at it, that one day the grace of God just shined down on me, and I just didn't want to drink anymore. And if I hadn't been with you all this time, it never would have happened. I believe that. That's why I think you saved my life. I hope I might have said something here that might help somebody out there tonight. Maybe somebody that's stumbling and bumbling around and can't get sober for money or love. I used to think I never would. I used to think I'd never be like people I saw around me in AA. I always thought of these dry periods that at best it was just temporary, that somewhere out there there was another drunk, and I knew it. That's a horrible way to feel, and all I can say to you is keep coming. Keep coming and pray the best you know how. A friend of mine in Birmingham said he started praying. His sponsor told him to. And said the first night he got down, and he said he got in the most pious position he could think of, and he said, "Dear God, oh, damn, this ain't going to do any good." But he kept on doing it, and after about 3 weeks, he started praying, and he really meant it. So I guess what I'm saying is anything's possible if you'll keep coming to these meetings. You'll keep an open mind. Find somebody that's been sober a while and start worrying the devil about them. Ask them questions. Ask them to be your sponsor. Stay with them, and 6 months later, if you still like them, you got the wrong sponsor. But I sure would like to thank whoever made it possible for me to be over here. I was going to be here anyway. I love to come over here. I missed last year, got snowed out, and it was a real disappointment to me. But I found something real important to me over here 2 years ago. And I know it went a long way toward helping me stay sober at that time. I had only been dry a couple of months, so not even that long, I guess. And coming over here was a tremendous help to me then, and it is going to be this week. This meeting here this weekend could very well save somebody in this audience's life. If you don't think this alcoholism is life or death, you just ought to come with me every day. See what I see. I guarantee you, it ain't all moonlight and roses. But I do appreciate, Lil, you and your committee asking me to come over. I was coming anyway, but it did me a lot of good to get up here and get some of this junk out of my system. And I hope maybe it helps somebody else. Thank you.